Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone to a terrific Thursday. You're on FNR Football Nation Radio, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful, beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is Calcio Cafe, Australia's only breakfast show dedicated to football. We are, of course, your voice of football. You can join in the conversation anytime on 9944 9999. That's 9944 9999. You can also join in the conversation on Twitter at FNR underscore radio. And not only can you join in the conversation, we're giving it away today to anyone who wants to give us a ring, and the best caller will get a fantastic prize. And the prize is from Ital. And did you know that the Columba is a traditional Easter dove cake? It's sort of like a cousin of the panettone we're giving away over Christmas. And with thanks to our great friends at Ital, you can win a premium-packed Ital Columba along with Ital's improved Greek koulourakia, the egg twist biscuits. All you need to do is be the best caller during the show and you'll be in the running to win the Ital Delicious Columba. Give us a call on 9944 9999. Of course, we're giving that away on all our live shows throughout all of March. So it's a fantastic giveaway. So join in the conversation anytime. Of course, coming up in this hour, we've got FNR News with Josh Parrish coming up very, very soon. We catch up with Matt Simon, star striker there for Sydney FC. We talk all things EPL with Richard Bayliss, host of the Optus Sport EPL coverage. In Club Corner, we chat to Kerry Huang, the president of the Melbourne University Futsal Club, and in Planet NPL, we catch up with Shay Chamoun from the Victorian NTC team that is playing in the WNPL in Victoria. There's heaps to get through, so let's get into it.
Oh, that is breathtaking!
FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yeah, so we're kicking off with Josh Parrish. Now, Josh, I'll put my teeth back in and you can give us the update of the news overnight.
You must have been salivating too much after that Ital.
It's true. I've got half a bun in my mouth at the moment. That's what the problem is. But
I too am suddenly starving. But our top story this morning is, of course, the Algarve Cup match between the Matildas and Norway being played right now. The Matildas went into halftime 3-1 up, thanks to goals from Claire Polkinghorne, Chloe Legazzo, and, say it with me now, Sam Kerr.
That's a chance. Kerr! She's broken the record. Sam Kerr with her, well, it's her eighth goal in seven games, or ninth goal, apologies, in seven games, and that's a record for the Australia women's side. Seven successive games she's been on the scoring sheet. And she does it again. A really cool finish past Ingrid Pjelmseth. And having taken the lead, now Norway trail 3-1.
Sam Kerr breaking all sorts of records, scoring seven consecutive games for the women's national team, breaking the record previously held by Sarah Walsh. Now, the commentator got a little mixed up there. I think Sam Kerr's scoring too many goals for him to count, because it's actually 12 goals in her last seven games.
Yeah, she's scoring them so quick that he can't keep up, a count of them.
Yeah,
at the moment,
absolutely. So. Do you remember when a good striker used to score a goal every two games?
Yeah, that's a good ratio of a good striker over a long, long period of time. But actually, nowadays, Lionel Messi scores more than a goal a game.
And Sam's
and
almost turning
the same. Absolutely. Sam's up there with those guys.
She's turning that ratio on its head, two goals a game almost. It's now 3-3. Norway's staged a stirring comeback in some very difficult conditions. The wind with Norway this half and driving rain, so all to play for with about 12 minutes of regulation time left. Now, there are plenty of other matches around Europe. Tottenham Hotspur up 1-0. At home to Rochdale in their FA Cup replay with Heung-Min Son on the score sheet. There's some Primera Division action in Spain. Athletic Bilbao are drawing 1-1 at home to Valencia. Getafe are up 3-0 against Deportivo La Coruña, and Malaga are losing 1-0 to Sevilla. Atletico Madrid, Leganés and Eibar, Villarreal still to come. Paris Saint-Germain drawing 0-0 with Marseille in their Coupe de France quarterfinal. This is the second time those two teams have faced off in the space of just a few days. And there's some Coppa Italia action. Juve are through to the final, winning 1-0 at home to Atalanta, a 2-0 win on aggregate. And Lazio and Milan, it's still 0-0 in their second leg after 24 minutes. The first leg was also 0-0, so no one has broken the deadlock as of yet.
Just like good Italian teams, I think that's
it's the perfect
par
game
for the course for the Italian teams. But thanks, Josh. We'll get more news from you later on in the show. Now let's talk a little bit of EPL.
Oh, it's gone in! The fairy tale finish!
EPL. Yes, of course. So Optus Sport delivers Premier League fans live games, exclusive highlights and wall-to-wall shows featuring insights from expert commentators and analysis on the ground in the UK. It's the only place where you can watch every match of the English Premier League live at home in selected venues and on the go, data-free. And joining us today is the executive producer and host of Optus Sport EPL coverage, Richard Bayliss. Good morning to you, Richard.
Morning, Carlos. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, really great to catch up this morning too, mate. Look, before we get to the games this weekend, I just want to talk about a couple of the issues. I mean, Arsenal, the talk about Arsene Wenger moving on and the likes of Thierry Henry taking over, that's gaining a bit of momentum this week.
Yeah, unsurprisingly. I think you start to name some names and get a bit of momentum behind the idea that Wenger leaves. And, you know, Arsenal fans are always going to latch onto that. I mean, a supposed shortlist comes out this week in regards to managers that they're looking at. Thierry Henry wasn't actually on that, but, you know, he said some comments that he would see it as a dream to one day manage Arsenal. And sometimes that's all it needs for the fire to catch hold and start to burn. And I know Patrick Vieira is another one who would see, you know, the job as a dream. You know, former Arsenal players, there's a romanticism about those guys taking over. Of course, they won so many trophies under Wenger in his early years, but I'm not so sure it's realistic. I mean, Henry certainly, I don't think is. Vieira maybe longer term, but, you know, the other guys like Brendan Rodgers is one that's really got the Arsenal fans divided this week. Most probably don't want Brendan Rodgers at the club. Jardim from Monaco is another one mentioned. Mikel Arteta, also a former Arsenal player and captain, has been mentioned because of the fact of what he's done alongside Pep Guardiola at City. But the theme to all of it, I think, Carlos, is, you know, obviously Wenger out has been such a big theme over the last couple of years with Arsenal fans, but the fact that there are now names being leaked out of conversations would indicate that this story is, it's gone a little bit further now, and the idea of Wenger leaving is now much more realistic, particularly after how much they were embarrassed in the League Cup final. Yes, it's a League Cup final, but, you know, I think the fact that it was very symbolic compared to a club in City where they're at, I think you'll see, you know, this only gain more and more momentum, the idea that Wenger's going to go, finally.
They're probably the only other club in the world that are in the position that Manchester United were in a couple of years ago when Sir Alex Ferguson moved on. It was always going to be a difficult transition to the next manager. And it's taken years, really, for it to come anywhere near where it's anywhere near satisfactory for a club like Manchester United. So they can look upon what's happened there and not get someone who's learning on the job or not get someone who's not going to command that change room. So I think even someone like a Carlo Ancelotti walking into that change room, really stamping his culture and his authority in there, and also his management style, which probably wouldn't be necessarily the same as Arsene Wenger.
No, that's right. And I think the longer you wait, though, as well, you know, the fear around the Manchester United scenario is a valid one, but the longer you wait, the more likely that is to happen. You know, I mean, Wenger's been there for over 20 years now, 22 years. What he's done has been incredible. There's no doubt about it. But the further, the longer he stays amid sort of claims of, you know, basically just unrest throughout the whole club, it puts him in a situation where they're going to be so far away from Manchester City, which they already are. They're going to be so far away from United. Even Tottenham across the road, you know, they're so much stronger at the moment. And in terms of that philosophy, I just wonder what manager would come in there and be able to change things, you know, holistically anyway, because Wenger runs the club, runs the team, I should say, very much in the image of how the owners run the club. He understands what the owners are trying to do or not trying to do, as it were, the financial model they're working to. I don't know how many big managers like Carlo Ancelotti would be able to come in and avoid that, or at least work to those sort of sets of boundaries. But you never know. I mean, maybe the owners would be open to a complete rethink, but when it comes to dollars and cents, I would seriously doubt it.
Absolutely. I suppose Arsenal don't have the winning record that Sir Alex had at Man U and the expectations to win straight away. Real Madrid's loss against Espanyol during the week is a very interesting one. Not that it's directly linked to the EPL, but the fact that apparently in the Madrid media, Gareth Bale is copping heaps at the moment. There has been talk about an exchange with him and Hazard at Chelsea. Whatever happens, I think with this talk, there might be a greater chance of Gareth Bale coming to the English Premier League, and I think that's a really exciting prospect. Where do you think he might end up if he does come back?
Well, I hope he does. I agree. I think he'd be, you know, it's just great to have someone like him back in the Premier League. He's gone away, and regardless of the relationship he has with Madrid fans and also the fact that he's been injured quite a bit, he's achieved so much at Real Madrid. I mean, multiple Champions League wins, league win. It's been a really good sort of character. Well, as a footballer, it's been a great sort of evolution for Gareth Bale. I think Tottenham would obviously be the one that you'd look at and go, there'd be a great story to that. You'd kind of hope that that could happen from a pure romanticism again point of view. But Chelsea makes a lot of financial sense. And Manchester United is another one that have been sniffing around for the last couple of years. And I just wonder whether David De Gea is a make weight in a lot of this, because I think it's a matter of time until he goes back to Spanish football. I feel like every single transfer window he's spoken about going to Real Madrid. So maybe there's a deal to be had there. I know that was spoken about in the last transfer window, that maybe there's a somewhat of a swap deal happening there with Ronaldo, but then maybe it becomes Gareth Bale as well. So I think he will continually be linked to England until he's finally back there, Gareth Bale, and I think he'd be all the better for it, and so would the league, because this is someone that was created at Southampton, created in England, did fantastically well there, but has evolved so much in Spain, and I hope he comes back.
Well, if he's coming back a better player, a more cultured player, he might even cost more than what he went for. I think it was nearly £100 million. I mean, depending on what sort of currency you're talking about, it was a lot of money, and I think he even cost more than Ronaldo when he went over to Real Madrid. In this day of the inflationary market that we're in, he'd probably go for a lot more.
Well, yeah, he was more expensive than Ronaldo. And you talk about which currency it is, it's Monopoly money, and it's only become more that way. The market is just moving so quick. I mean, you look at the fees paid for Neymar, Mbappe, Coutinho. I mean, these figures are just ridiculous. The only way he'll go for less, I guess, coming back would be if it's some sort of a swap deal, or Real Madrid just want to get rid of him. But in this market, I mean, a cheap deal these days is literally £100 million. So, there'll be some stupid money thrown around, as always.
But it'll be really exciting to see him in the EPL. Antonio Conte, is there any chance, given that Chelsea lost against Man U, they're still in the Champions League, played quite well against Barcelona, but it was only 1-1. Barcelona go back home with an away goal, so the chance they get might get knocked out of that. Will he survive the season, given that apparently from Italian media this morning, he's confirmed as a number one target for the Italian national team?
Yeah, he'll have options, that's for sure. I think a lot of it comes down to what happens against Manchester City on Monday morning, because they played really well against Manchester United in the first 45 at Old Trafford. They didn't have too many clear-cut chances. Alvaro Morata hit the bar, they were 1-0 up. They could have gone on and got something out of that game, and I think all of a sudden you look at Chelsea as, oh, okay, they probably should finish top four, or, you know, fear them at least to finish top four. But at the moment, one loss means that they look unlikely to finish top four. And the question would be, anyway, if they finish third or fourth after winning the title, amid all the unrest at that club this year, they've got a weaker squad, why would Roman Abramovich keep Antonio Conte based on what he's done with previous managers? That's kind of the, you know, it's so incredibly volatile at Stamford Bridge sometimes. And you can finish second and still be relieved of your duties. You know, Mourinho lost his job half a season after winning the title as well. Things can change so dramatically quickly at Chelsea. I don't expect him to stay beyond one more season at the most, but even that seems far-fetched, because, you know, as has been pointed out by several of the guys on our show Premier League Today, is that, you know, he's coming into training and just not looking like he wants to be there. You know, last season he did, and he enjoyed, it seemed like he enjoyed going to training and working with those players, but he's lost so many good players over the course of the season. He hasn't been backed in the transfer market. I'm not totally sure how he can actually turn that around. So to me, it's a question of time anyway. But the Italian gig, yeah, that's arguably a bigger job than the Chelsea one anyway. I mean, rebuilding from where Italian football's at. But I don't think he'll struggle for a job anyway, put it that way.
Yeah, once he wipes away his tears and goes to the ATM and checks his balance, I think he'll know that everything's really, really good. Mate, you did mention that Chelsea up against Man City on Monday. Man City also got Arsenal tomorrow morning. So it's a big couple of days plays for Man City, but they've look, they won the League Cup. They're 13 points ahead in the league. At what point did Man City start fully concentrating on the Champions League and just letting the league run its course the way it's going at the moment?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I don't think it's quite yet because of the size of those two fixtures coming up. They've got obviously two games in 3 days is a big ask. They'll have to rotate their squad, which is fine because their squad is so incredibly deep. But I would think it's once, you know, these big couple of fixtures are out of the way, they're pretty much through already to the quarterfinals with one leg to play in the round of 16. So, you know, they've got a little bit of time yet. I wonder whether they were looking at the record books and whether Pep Guardiola was just trying to really rub it into his rivals. I mean, we know Pep, you know, there's a bit of ego in a lot of what he does, and he wants to win the league by not just 1 point. He'd love to win it by 20 or as many as possible. The record is 18. So, you know, with a game in hand, if they beat Arsenal, it'll be a 16-point gap. But ultimately, they will have to focus on the Champions League at some point. He was brought in to win the Champions League. City have won two Premier League titles. The Champions League is the Holy Grail, certainly. So I think you'll see it happen probably before the quarterfinal or around about then. And, yeah, very much looking forward to who they're playing against as well because, you know, getting to the pointy end, a lot of questions will be asked of all teams at that stage, and City very much look the real deal in Europe as well as in England.
Well, Richard, the race for the Champions League's really hotting up. A couple of English teams in there too, so that'll be really interesting what happens there. And it's going to be a really interesting weekend of EPL, and you guys are covering it beautifully. Thanks for joining us today. I look forward to speaking to you again very, very soon about all things EPL.
Cheers, Carlos. Have a good weekend.
Good on you, mate. That's Richard Bayliss, the host of the Optus Sport EPL coverage. Of course, Optus Sport delivers Premier League fans, live games, exclusive highlights and wall-to-wall shows featuring insights from expert commentators and analysts on the ground in the UK. And it's the only place you can watch every match of the English Premier League live at home in selected venues or on the go data-free. Let's take a break. Coming up, it's Club Corner with Kerry Huang, the president of the Melbourne University Futsal Club here on Calcio Cafe on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24-7, you're on FNR Football Nation Radio, broadcasting across Australia and across the world. This is Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. And don't forget, today we're giving it away on all our live shows. Actually, in fact, right throughout March, we're giving it away. With thanks to our great friends there at Ital. You can win a premium-packed Ital Columba. It's a sort of cousin to the old Panettone, along with Ital's new improved Greek Koularakia, the egg twist biscuit. All you need to do is be the best caller during any of our live shows today, and you will be in the running to win Ital's delicious Columba. Just give us a call on 99-44-99-99. That's 99-44-99-99. Coming up, we've got Shay Chamoun from the Victorian NTC team that's playing in the WNPL in Victoria as part of our Planet NPL. But first, it's time to go to our club corner with Kerry Huang, the president of Melbourne University Futsal Club, on the line. Good morning, Kerry.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, really, really well, mate. I'm glad I'm talking to you this morning about futsal. I think you're the first futsal club to be on FNR after 3 months of broadcasting. So that's a great achievement by you guys. Of course, you guys have been a futsal club for a while. That's linked to Melbourne University. Tell us about how it started and what it looks like today.
Yeah, so it started all the way back in 2007, actually. So this is when I was still in high school. So initially, it just started off as a men's team that was competing over at Futsal Laws in the men's V League there, and then eventually sort of became had a more social aspect sort of around the turn of the decade. So now we've got a range of activities that focuses mostly on a social competition, which we call the Friday Night League. And there's about 30 teams and sort of like a World Cup format where there's a group stage and then it progresses out to a knockout stage. So that's been incredibly popular. We get many, many students from not only the university, but just from the local community as well that participate. We also have a men's team that's playing at the moment in State League 2 of Futsal Oz. So that's sort of our more competitive aspect. And we have had competitive women's teams represent as well at Futsal Oz. So a variety of activities here and there, both social and competitive.
That's great, Kerry. It looks like you've got a good pool of players to pick to choose for your elite, more the elite team that's playing in the futsal league.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's sort of the way it started. We were sort of looking for new players to to help support our men's team, and that's sort of how the concept of Friday Night League came about. So we do have a women's side of things. We are trialing a new women's competition that runs 4 to 6 on Monday. So if there are any women's who want to get involved with futsal that are sort of in the Parkville area, Carlton area, the university community, Melbourne University, come down on the 5th of March, and we're having a couple of kickabout sessions just to get people involved in this new competition for women's.
I'd imagine that with your Friday night kickabouts where everyone gets together and plays in that World Cup format, you'd probably get some pretty good players who play outdoor just joining in with their mates. Any stars that that you can tell us about that have rocked up and just out of nowhere who want to kick with their mates?
You mean recent superstars?
Just anyone really who's played the game outdoors at a reasonable level, NPL or even higher?
Probably not at that level, because I'd imagine they probably want to focus on their NPL game the next day on over the weekend. But we've had a former, I'd say a current futsal who played that competition several years back. So his name's Adam Cooper. So he did play actually in one season, which was pretty amazing for everyone who was there that season at FNL, because everyone kind of knew who he was, and there was a bit of a vibe whenever he played or when his team played. So that was pretty cool. We do get a couple of outdoor boys, but they're mostly from our good friends over at the Melbourne University Soccer Club. So there is a bit of interaction between the two clubs.
I'd imagine being linked to Melbourne University, your facilities are pretty much state of the art as far as great. Surfaces to play on, great halls to play on, and maybe some other, some of the other halls that are linked to other universities around the place?
We like to think so. We make do with what we can. So we currently use the hockey pitch because it's the only venue at Melbourne that gives us the largest capacity in which we can run our games within a short amount of time. But we have a dedicated crew of at least 10 people each week that help set up the FNL. And this also includes the referees, who do a fantastic job week in, week out. And the competition's only grown. It used to only be 24 teams. Now it's 30 teams. And every semester, we have to, unfortunately, just knock back teams who put in their registration too late. So, it's definitely something to get around.
And funding, how do you fund things like referees and maybe hire facilities?
They come directly usually from the registration cost of Friday Night League. So the university does give us a little bit of support, which is good. But most of it is covered from the Friday Night League and through the registrations there.
That's fantastic, mate. Any challenges running this competition? It just sounds like a really great night on the Friday night, everyone getting together and playing some really good football. Is it just all great, or do you find that there's some challenges to run a competition like this?
I guess sort of being part of the university community, we do rely heavily on volunteers, and also being part of the university, being affiliated with the university, your demographics of students are quite different. We do get a lot of international students and people who sort of come from interstate or come from the country come. So we do suffer at times when it's not university timetabling, so during the holidays or during exams. We do suffer sometimes for volunteerism, and perhaps we don't have that strong local capabilities that some of the other clubs that might have, especially like, let's say, a lot of the local soccer clubs might have, where they have a local community who's been with them for a long time. So we do suffer sometimes for that, but in recent years I've found that there's been a number of good people who want to help out the club. So we've been fortunate to have those people on board.
Good stuff, Kerry. It sounds like a really great competition for people to get involved with. Do they have to be students of the university, or is one of the residential universities for them to be part of this, or can you come off the street and be part of a team?
No, no, absolutely. We don't make any restrictions. We like to be very inclusive here. So you do not need to be affiliated with the university. We've had teams where it's mostly just been teams from the people from the local restaurant that come down and start to put in the team. So, you know, we welcome anyone and everyone. So the Friday Night League, I should mention, is a men's only league. We do have a women's league that we're trialing on Mondays from 4 to 6 p.m. So that season will start on the 12th of March, which is Labor Day. But we do have a kickabout session on the 5th of March for any women who want to give that a go.
Good stuff, Kerry. It's a terrific competition. I hear a lot of good things about it. A couple of the FNR producers are involved with it and they know about it, and that's why we got you on. But terrific
good.
Work. terrific work there, and continue to grow.
Cheers. Thanks, Carlos.
Good on you, mate. That's Kerry Huang, the president of the Melbourne University Futsal Club. Now let's talk a bit of WNPL.
Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful!
FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Yes, joining us in Planet WNPL this morning is Shay Shamoon, one of the Victorian NTC players that's playing in the WNPL in Victoria. Good morning to you, Shay.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's great to speak to you. Now, you're a youngster, I hear. You're 16-year-old, but you're scoring goals for fun in the underage competition. This year, playing with the seniors there in the WNPL with the Victorian NTC team. On the weekend, though, you lost 5-1 against a really, really strong team in South Melbourne. They were last year's premiers also. The scoreline doesn't look too good. What was the assessment of the game at the end of it?
Yeah, look... We played well. We were doing everything, most of the things right. They were a very strong side. They're very physical. Overall, we were up 1-0. Then they came back. They had some really strong players, but, we did well.
Yeah, I heard you scored first. That would have given you a lot of excitement early on. But like you said, I think the experience and the maturity of South Melbourne, who have had a lot of success at this level, of course, in the end, they were much too strong. But you are a 16-year-old who played 83 minutes in that game. What did you take out of the game personally?
It was a really good experience. I actually got the assist. It was a really good experience going up against girls that are a lot bigger and stronger. It was really good. The game's a lot faster than what I was used to, but no, it was a really good experience.
And they were playing you up front, were they, Shay?
Yeah, I was playing on the wing, yeah.
Okay, and of course, did you have any, chances, any sighters on goal? Because we know you're an instinctive goal scorer.
Not really. I didn't really get many opportunities, but I think I played okay. I think I helped the team out, but didn't get any chances in front of goal.
No worries. And of course, when you play in these games, you sort of walk off. I know it was a big, big loss in the end, but you had some joy in that first half, at least with the start you had. And you said you played pretty well given the opposition. Do you walk off that field thinking, I'm only 16, I've played, just come out of underage football, but I reckon I can cut it at this level?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, I think it takes a lot of hard work, but I think I'm, ready to take that next step. And, I'm really excited about the opportunity to play in the seniors if I get it again. And,
You've had a lot of success, as I said, playing in the underage football with Southern United and Box Hill. You've won grand finals in the last 2 years with both those teams, and you've won the Golden Boot, so you score for fun in those competitions. What have you found the biggest difference between playing with girls compared to playing with women?
Yeah, I think probably the physicality is probably the biggest difference. The women are very, very strong on and off the ball. They're always ready, always on their toes. Probably the physicality and probably just the pace of the game in general. Just every pass is fast, every movement is fast, every run is fast, but... yeah, that's probably just the main difference.
How about your runs as a striker? Are they better at servicing your runs when you're playing at the level you're playing at now rather than when you were playing as a younger girl in underage football?
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone's on the same page and everybody expects the same thing of each other. And I think making those runs and, passes and stuff, it's definitely a bit easier because everybody is expecting the exact same thing and knows what each other wants.
Of course, your name is Shay Shamoon, and that I'm just trying to work out what the background of that name is. Can you tell us a bit about your cultural background and where your love for the game came from?
Yeah, so my dad is half Italian, half Lebanese. So
that's an interesting mix.
Yeah, it is. So that's where Shamoon came from.
Yep.
But yeah, I think I started playing when I was about six. Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I just played at a local club and then kept moving on from there. I always loved the social side of playing soccer. And yeah.
And tell us, when you first joined the club, was there someone that attracted you to the club? Did you have a brother or a sister that played the game? Was there something you saw on TV? How did you end up joining the club at 6 years old in the first place?
I played every day with the boys at school, in primary school, just at lunchtime and recess. I think I originally played basketball when I was younger, and then I was also interested in playing footy. But yeah, I don't know, Dad always loves soccer. He used to play. And then, yeah, we just signed up and made the team.
And were you a natural straight away? Were you scoring goals straight away as a striker?
I actually played defender for a few years when I was younger and then moved to midfield for a few years. And now I'm, yeah, striker. I'm up front.
Yeah, in your old age, you've moved to striker, haven't you, as a 16-year-old?
Yeah.
I just want to know what sort of inspiration the Matildas have been for you. Do you now look at, you know, that team and what they've done and Sam Kerr and, you know, Caitlin Ford and Kaya Simon and say, listen, I want to be like them. And in a few years' time, I'm going to be knocking on that door?
Absolutely. Yeah, I follow them, you know, really strongly. I love the way that they play. I love them on and off the pitch. They're really inspiring women. And, I think they're great to have for women's football in Australia.
So who do you want to emulate the most out of that team?
I absolutely love Steph Catley.
Mm-hmm.
I think her leadership is really inspiring. I've followed her for a very long time. And, of course, Sam Kerr. I love the whole team. Really,
yeah, good. So you should, mate. They are fantastic. And W League, obviously aspirations to play for one of the W League teams soon?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully one day.
So how will that come about? Will you go trialling or will someone come knock on your door? Or how do you get recruited to the W League from where you are now?
Look, I think being in the NTC program, that helps. I think your name is a little bit more out there when you're in the NTC program. I think also if I continue to play at the senior level, then hopefully I could potentially get noticed. But, yeah, a lot of hard work and commitment. And then hopefully, yeah, I'll be able to trial one day.
On you, Shay. I love what you're saying. I love your aspirations. And we'll keep an eye on you in the WNPL this season. I'm tipping someone with your pedigree and scoring the goals you have in the underage football and, you know, walking off the field on the weekend. Yes, it was a big loss, but being confident that you can do it week in, week out, I think you're going to be a bit of a star in the future, mate. So FNR will keep an eye on you and we'll chat to you down the track.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
No worries, mate. That's Shay Shamoon. Let's keep an eye on that name because she's going to be a star of the future, playing for the Victorian NTC team in the WNPL in Victoria. Like I said, she's going to be knocking in the goals before we know it. Let's take a break. And next up, it's Josh Parrish in FNR News. And, of course, we've got Matt Simon from Sydney FC coming up very, very soon here on Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7, you're listening to the voice of football throughout Australia and across the world, FNR Football Nation Radio. You're on the Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. We're hoping to get up to Sydney and speak to Matt Simon, star striker there for Sydney FC very, very soon. But let's first go to the newsroom and speak to Josh Parrish. Now, Josh, we don't have breakfast at this time of the morning, but for those people out there who want to have a chance of having a fantastic breakfast, with thanks to our great friends at Ital, you can win a premium packed Ital Columba, and that's like a little bit of a cousin to the panettone, I've been told, along with Ital's new improved Greek Kouladakia, the egg twist biscuit. All you have to do is be the best caller in any of our live shows today and throughout March to win this delicious Columba. It's 9999999999999. Now, don't leave the studio and go and get one of these Columbas because I need you here right now. But what a fantastic prize it is for people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I usually have no appetite this time in the morning, but something's different today.
I know.
And if you have an appetite for football, well, we've got a treat for you. The Matildas were in action against Norway in the Algarve Cup. They win in 3-1 at halftime. Let's hear the goals.
And Minda gets away, two in the middle for her. She tries to put it in, a chance, and the opening goal for Norway. Get it onto the post, it could be a real tricky one for the keeper. And it's in the back of the net. What a header that was. Hulking on with the goal for Australia, and the lead for Norway lasted barely 2 minutes. Kerr gets a touch, it'll come to Gori. Now Devana back to Gori, into the middle, and a slice dangerously to the keeper, and there's a goal. Oh, bad mistake from Hjelmseth, and it's prodded in by Lugazo. That's a chance. Kerr, she's broken the record. Sam Kerr with her, well, it's her eighth goal in seven games, or ninth goal, apologies, in seven games, and that's a record for the Australia women's side. Seven successive games she's been on the scoring sheet, and she does it again. A really cool finish past Ingrid Hjelmseth. And having taken the lead, now Norway trail 3-1.
And as we said earlier, the commentator couldn't count up all Sam Kerr's goals. It's actually 12 in seven games, but she has broken that successive scoring record now.
He actually sounded like he was dropping off to sleep too. Commentator, come on. It's an international competition, commentator. Get a bit more fired up about it, please.
Look, I think maybe back Norway. He was feeling assault. I noticed he was a bit more excited for Norway's goals. But Norway had the swirling wind in their favour in the second half, and they fought back to level the game at 3-3. But you can't keep our Matildas down. Let's listen to what happened in the fourth minute of stoppage time.
Van Egmond puts it in. Oh, where's it going to break? And it's still a chance. Oh, it's in the back of the net. Australia have won it with the last kick of the game. It's hard on Norway, but you have to admire the persistence of the Matildas.
Yes, Claire Polkinghorne with their second of the game, and most importantly, the last-minute winner, a 4-3 thriller, and the Matildas take the chocolates.
It's really good that we did it that way too. Mm. If we'd won 4-0, sometimes you get in a little bit of complacency. These girls are very professional, by the way, but you can't help it sometimes. Get into a bit of complacency, you're fourth in the world, you've done really well in the last 12 months. It was great that Norway came back. It gives Alan Stasic something to really point out in the change room, but to come back then and get the last minute winner, that's a sign of a champion team.
Absolutely, and it'll definitely boost morale. It feels all the better if you do it in dramatic fashion, and the Matildas have done just that, and they're really the pride of our nation at the moment in regard to football. They're the leaders.
I think in women's sport, they are the pride of women's sport, and I'm so glad that somehow right in the middle of the AFLW season, we've got the Matildas doing well. I wish they were doing it here, though. The Algarve Cup, unfortunately, is in Portugal. But if they were doing it here, just more media and people clamouring for the girls, media opportunities and sponsorship and endorsements. You get them all over the TV, suddenly, we start making an impact.
I have a feeling this team's going to win a World Cup. It seems like it's going that way. The squad is absolutely stacked with talent. You know, they brought Michelle Heyman off the bench today. You know, Tamika Butt went off with an injury. Yeah. She went clattering into the advertising hoardings, and then you can...
Well, Kaya Simon's not playing. Caitlin's Ford. Kaya Simon and Caitlin Ford would be in the top 15 players in the world. If not, Caitlin Ford would be in the top 6 or 7 players in the world, and she's not playing. So, we've got a lot to look forward to. And who knows what's coming underneath, too. I mean, speaking to Shay Moon early on, a 16-year-old girl who's now absolutely determined and committed to going on and playing W League and then playing in the Matildas. How many of those girls are there around who are just great footballers? So,
and it'll be a new generation of girls inspired to play football by Sam Kerr's success. There's a lot of other football to get to. We could chat about the Matildas all day, but Tottenham Hotspur went in 1-1 at halftime with Rochdale. They've just started the second half there. Heung-min Son put Tottenham in front, and he had the opportunity to put them two goals up with a penalty, but his penalty was, he put it in the net, but his penalty was ruled out by the VAR for actually an illegal feint in the run-up.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, so he tried to get too tricky about it. You cannot go...
But these days, really, you have to almost stop, turn around to be caught in that. I mean, how, I'd love to see this illegal feint, because I've seen some illegal feints over the years that they've allowed. Just inconsistency. This is VAR gone mad, I reckon. It's interpretation by the referees. If that couldn't be picked up by the referee, if it was that bad.
Well, I didn't see it, but...
don't look, be nice about it, Josh. I know you're from the newsroom and you have to be nice, but don't be nice about it, really. How can the central referee not pick up a feint in the run-up? The referee's looking at the player and the VAR picks it up? My God,
and
what's going on?
It's rarely called when the goalkeeper comes way off their line to save one as well. So
yeah,
plenty of problems there. But Tottenham, I think they'll probably run out eventual winners against a stubborn Rochdale.
They are very stubborn, by the way. I mean, to see one all right now, it'll be a huge boil over. I reckon this is set back Tottenham. Look, I don't want to, with Harry Kane in your side, you can do anything, right? But if Rochdale knocked them out of this competition, this FA Cup competition, at home, that's a disaster for this club. Because you really have to win something before you win the big one. Look, they might prove us wrong this year, but they really, I mean, general sort of development of teams is that they've been there or thereabouts for the last couple of years. They're going deep into the FA Cup. They're against Rochdale. They're expected to probably, you know, be in the final or even win that FA Cup. And then you can go on and win the English Premier League or the Champions League. Now, they might prove me completely wrong and they might win a Champions League with Harry Kane in form. They certainly won't win the English Premier League. So they're going to have, and they're fighting to get into the top four. So for me, it's a huge game, this one, for them, because they won't win the Champions League, I don't believe. They won't win the English Premier League. They might not even get in the top four in the English Premier League. If they get knocked out by Rochdale, that's a failure of a year for them.
Yes, I mean, this gifted generation of talented players they have coming through might end up being the nearly men that Tottenham have, you know, been famous for being. But I think Harry Kane will win a Champions League, but I think it'll probably be with Real Madrid.
Just told that Tottenham has just scored their second goal. It was my pep talk that did it. They've got it beamed live into Wembley Stadium, where they're playing? They're playing in London?
At Wembley.
Yeah, that's right.
Giving them the hairdryer treatment.
The Carlos hairdryer treatment. That's a good one.
I didn't know you owned a hairdryer.
That should be. No, I don't. Only for my body hair. But I think that that should be a segment, Josh. The Carlos's body, not body care, but blow-dry treatment.
Absolutely. Atletico Madrid might be in need of a hairdryer treatment at halftime. If they can't break the deadlock against Leganés, it's currently 0-0 in the 24th minute, and Eibar are winning 1-0 at home to Villarreal, the goal coming from Kike in the blockbuster Coppa Italia semi-final between Lazio and AC Milan. It's still the perfect Italian 0-0 draw. So no one's made any mistakes, or everyone will go home happy. I don't think they'll even bother going to extra time.
No, it's what's expected. The philosophy of going to a game and not to lose rather than to win, that's a very much an Italian way, especially when these two big clubs are playing against each other. When I look at these midweek games in La Liga, for example, you know, people get excited about a Real Madrid Barcelona game. You know, I can do without going to see them. I'd rather go and see an Eibar Villarreal game. To tell you the truth, it just makes me want to get on a plane and go over and watch these games. You probably get a seat quite easily.
Yes.
And you're just seeing players who just are great professionals. The Diego Castros of this world, the Oriol Rieras of this world. It'd be full of those sort of players playing at that level. And, when I look at those sort of games, I kind of want to get over there and watch those.
Yeah, Leganés is definitely on my bucket list.
Yeah.
The cucumber growers, as they're known. That's literally their nickname. The stadium, the tiers are almost entirely vertical.
Yeah.
And apparently there's some great food at those games as well.
Of course.
You get a beautiful pork sandwich.
I can imagine.
Earlier in La Liga, Athletic, Bilbao and Valencia played out a 1-1 draw at San Mamés. Getafe won 3-0 at home to Deportivo La Coruña. And Sevilla got the 3 points away to Malaga, so a boost for them before their second leg against Manchester United. Tottenham still 2-1 up against Rochdale. The VAR hasn't chalked that one off as far as we know. And it's halftime between Paris Saint-Germain and Marseille. Angel Di Maria scoring on the stroke of halftime after being teed up by Julian Draxler.
That's a massive game over there in France. Not that I want to get to that either. I'd rather go and watch, Saint-Étienne versus Lyon or something like that.
You've got to go up to one of those northern French grounds. They're insane atmosphere.
Yeah.
One of those old, you know, mining towns. They direct all their frustrations about the economy into the
where they're not expected
support.
To win, but they still go. It's my type of team. But, Josh, thanks for joining us this morning with the news. Unfortunately, we weren't able to bring Matt Simon to you this morning. We'll hope we'll be able to get Matt next week. But this has been the Calcio Cafe show for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a fantastic day in football.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.